It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey once again today with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. How you do, Daniel?
Doing well, Mark. Thank you. And you?
I'm pretty good. This program this week is going to be a real can of worms. It's almost kind of like a religion in society. It's certainly a trendy subject, and it's just everywhere, and there's definitely people who are very radical about it. But the whole area of the homosexuality agenda, but you want to talk about homosexual thoughts as obsessive compulsion and addiction.
Yeah.
Can homosexuality actually be kind of a form of addiction?
Well, I think certainly the thoughts any sexual behavior can become an addiction. One of the reasons that I am on this topic this week, which is similar to the topic last week, because we are going to be talking about addiction, but addiction of a specific sort, is that I find some occasions now where I'm talking to mature men, Christian men, but wouldn't have to be a Christian to have this problem, but Christian men who are kind of troubled with unwanted homosexual thoughts. Now, there's nothing new about those thoughts, but what is new is about is the fact that because it's so the topic is so pervasive and so accepted in our society that people are actually beginning to interpret those thoughts as a sign that they might be homosexual. But I want to talk about those thoughts as just as they are. They're a form of obsessive compulsivity.
Absolutely.
And they're a form of addiction. And we talked in the last show, and we've talked in previous shows before. I'm thinking back to the April 11th show of this past year where we talked about casting down every thought or taking every thought captive. And so we talked about the addictive nature of thoughts and how the thoughts become addictive. So people can refer back to at the podcast, they can refer back to the April 11th show, Every Thought Captive. So I want to talk about this. And first of all, to introduce this, we can just talk about just how just the nature of this downward spiral, this moral free fall that this kind of postmodernism has us in. You know, postmodernism, the idea that there are no absolutes and there is really no truth. It's interpreted by whoever the reader is.
It's gotten me all the way to the birthing room at the hospital now. Mm-hmm. You have a boy or a girl and you are encouraged now. Do you really want to have a boy or a girl? Maybe they aren't really a boy or a girl. Maybe they're the other.
I'm not sure if people are aware of that before, but a lot of hospitals are actually providing counseling for the parents regarding a child that's already been born and whether or not the parents want the child to remain a boy or remain a girl or have a sex change or whatever. And the way that they get around this is, of course, if you know something about this, toddlers don't really have a sense of gender difference. They're too young for that. I think it's 5 or 6 years old when boys first start going, ooh, girls, and girls go, ick, boys. Because they know what little boys are made of, you know, snakes and snails and puppy dog tails. And so, but at that age, they understand those kinds of things. But before that, they don't really have a gender. So what the clever intellects are thinking, the pop psychology is saying, well, that's because they're neutral. They're neither gender. And the confusion is this, that there may be a whole spectrum of balance between feminine and versus masculine, but that's not gender. Those are traits, feminine traits versus masculine traits. Not all men are equally masculine. Some men become professional wrestlers and welders, and some men become florists and engineers. We're not all equally masculine. Women aren't all equally feminine, but women are all women. And men are all men. And so within the context of your gender, so what they've done is confuse this. Stuck up in the pee. They're using gender as if they were talking about feminine and masculine traits. And gender is physiological.
Yeah, biological. Yeah.
And so they say, well, so children, toddlers, they're at this stage where they're neither gender, and so they should have a choice. It's interesting that they have a choice after birth as to which gender, but they don't have a choice of life.
Yeah.
Just a little bit earlier.
Well, that's a whole different cup of worms.
So then once children then become aware of this, I think it's 5, 6 years old, they become self-aware and they begin to become self-conscious. You know, you can see signs of this in the playroom where I remember our daughter, when she was about 5 or 6 years old, she discovered that she didn't have any friends. And, well, actually she did have lots of friends, but it was her definition of friends. So at that age, she was an only child. And so she thought that a friend is someone who is just your friend and nobody else's friend. If they're somebody else's friend, they're not yours. Mm. Well, this is the beginning of the child becoming self-aware, self-conscious, and some of those things go along. Well, at that age, of course, being accepted as part of the group becomes of primary importance. And here's where this postmodern PCism plays kind of a trump card. It begins to dictate, objectivity, real truth, real values, things like the absolute gender of male and female. Those things are old world, and confusion is more popular and more right now. So
confusion is more popular.
Yeah. So so this whole idea of dysphoria then becomes kind of a desired thing for these innocent kids. Very much, I guess, suppose like getting a tattoo in order to belong to a group. So now it's not only tattoos, but it's being confused about, you know, whether you're a girl or a boy. And actually, in these classrooms of these young kids, being open-minded to the fact that just because this looks like a girl, it may not be a girl.
So you mean
be very careful.
Kids are coming up with them themselves, or this is something that adults
this
are putting
is some,
on them?
No, this is something that's been taught. Yeah, it's being taught. And down at that level now, to where, well, I've certainly seen it in junior high and before junior high with clients that I've talked to, where kids are being prepared now to accept that just because, you know, I don't know that there's that we've had the problem here, but they've certainly had the problem in Toronto and places in eastern Canada, where teachers are not allowed anymore to use gender things like he or she. They're having to come up with terms that don't specify one or the other, because you never know, just because that person looks like a girl or a boy, that doesn't mean they're a girl
or a boy.
Well,
that's why I almost maintain that the homosexuality, it's almost a form of, it's kind of a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a philosophy that has taken hold, a popular to be weird, to be queer, to buck the trend. Like you say, I thought that was interesting. You said it's old world to believe in boys and girls.
Yeah.
And it's cool and pop and hip to be confused.
Yeah.
And where did this ever, and why is this being taught in our schools?
Yeah.
And certainly being taught through the media. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it's almost like a, you know, a conspiracy or something.
Well, it is really the inevitable end of the whole postmodernist idea that there really isn't objective truth, and that there aren't any.
And yet science is on the side of a more conservative approach to this. Men are really different from women.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize that. I still hear people, and heard the other day on the radio an attorney who was arguing for the liberal side, talking about all the research. Well, there isn't any. And you know, the person just showed his ignorance by talking about this, because if you've read on these things, there is research out there, but it all says just the opposite. And you know what they say about data, you know, it can tell you anything if you torture it long enough. And that's what they do with these, twisting the results of these things, because all the research that I've ever seen at all the robust research has always shown just the opposite of what they thought they wanted it to show, particularly the twin research. And that's really the nail in the coffin. You know, they say that, you know, if homosexuality or anything like that is genetic, then twins would both have it. And they never do. It's no different than just any kind of a random selection. So that pretty much, that's the nail in the coffin.
And review too, I mean, homosexuality not too long ago was part of the the DSM classification of a mental illness. Mm-hmm. And it was taken over, you're saying, what, in the 70s? Or
In the 70s, American Psychiatric Association was having a convention in San Francisco, and it was literally physically taken over by a few very violent activists for the gay program. And, of course, conservatives aren't going to take the guy to the ground and punch him in the nose. They're going to be polite, and the other people are not. So threatening letters were going to psychiatrists who were traditional in their view. And actually, the publications that the APA controls now, you can't get an article published if you have a traditional view. So they've blocked out all of the real science and all of the legitimate research.
Well, almost to the point where, you can be sued or criminal activity, fined, if you believe. So, I mean, it's completely flipped over.
Yeah. So where does this leave us? Well, as I was
saying, people who do want to change, people who do have, they think homosexual tendencies are unwanted and they want to go a different direction.
Yeah. And as I was saying, the reason that I got onto this topic this week is because I, in the context of all this, what we've been talking about, it's even people that have their kind of life on a straight track in a lot of ways. They have these thoughts, and so it's a lot easier today to fear that, because I have those thoughts, maybe I'm homosexual, because there's still some confusion out there about what that actually means and the fact that, you know, a lot of people think that homosexuality is something in your character or in your genetics that it's inside of you. And so we have this the phrase coming out. And so you're sort of freeing yourself when, in fact, these are thought patterns and they can be changed just like.
Well, you make the statement here, too, in your notes. Homosexual thoughts are not evidence of your true nature trying to express themselves.
Right. They're evidence that your brain has found these behaviors to facilitate a particular neurological state, in the same way that we find like a morbid attraction to things that are gruesome. You know, nobody likes to think of themselves as liking gruesome pictures of that. But we all seem to share this morbid attraction. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know when there's an accident on the highway. And, you know, particularly if there are several aid vehicles and, you know, people slow down, they want to look at to see if there's any blood on the sidewalk or the street or anything like that. We have this kind of a morbid attraction to that. Do we want those thoughts? No, but they do something in our brain. They tickle our brain in a way that for some reason is, you know, somewhat attractive, you know. And so even these thoughts, why homosexual thoughts, for example, well, precisely because they're the thoughts that are the most unwanted. Mm-hmm. And those are precisely the ones that are going to try to invade. Why? Because they do something in the brain, very much give it a spike, you know, something feels good in some sense.
And getting back to your main point that homosexuality is a form of addiction. Mm-hmm. Form of sexual addiction. Interesting idea this week on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. If you're struggling with this, maybe you want some extra help. Maybe you have a loved one who is struggling with homosexual thoughts, behaviors, and they want a different perspective. Daniel would love to help. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, so you can call me at 425-778-6169, 778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. And we also have these shows podcasted at that same website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with a word regarding the many faces of anger. The key to managing anger is to recognize it when it doesn't look like anger. Otherwise, we find ourselves resisting anger when it wears one face, but then embracing it when it wears another. From personal experience and professional training, I understand this. I can help you recognize the faces of anger and teach you tools of effective management. Contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, or call 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey once again this week with Daniel Pryor. And this week's subject, homosexual thoughts as obsessive compulsion disorder or maybe an addiction. Mm-hmm. What a thought. We thought homosexual, you're born homosexual. Mm-hmm. Neither mm-hmm. Daniel or I believe that. It's a learned behavior. A lot of reasons mm-hmm. for it and a lot of outcomes for this kind of behavior.
Yeah, and specifically this week, people are haunted, young people and even mature adults that seem in this immoral culture, current immoral culture we have, that they, when they have these unwanted thoughts, and we said it at the end of the last segment that, you know, the unwanted thought is almost precisely the one that is going to invade you, very much like an attraction to the a morbid attraction mm-hmm. to something gruesome,
mm-hmm. taboo,
or
mm-hmm.
you know, they say bad news sells that kind of thing. So even though we don't want these thoughts, they're precisely the ones that we're going to have because they spike the neurology in the brain. They are, let's say, interesting, and so last week. We talked about addiction of the brain and the mind, and I just wanted to reiterate there that, you know, when the brain finds an optimal neurological state for any given situation, the mind's inclined to build a supportive narrative which serves to entrench that brain's behavior. For example, under stress, a person might, let me say, punch the wall or have a drink of alcohol or view pornography or have a frightening thought or go for a walk. Some of those things can be positive. But these behaviors then reinforce the narrative, and then the behaviors reinforce the brain's activity. And so they become addictions. And some of those can even be thoughts. So one of the things I wanted to tie in here today is these kind of homosexual thoughts that people are having. Not as a sign that you're a homosexual, but I want to draw the parallel that I've seen between these thoughts and obsessive compulsive behavior, and also addictive behavior. Knowing that the brain can be addicted to unwelcome thoughts, for that reason. So,
and because of our society promoting this as an mm-hmm. alternative and a good thing, it's that much more prevalent.
Yeah, it's just kicked the door wide open. Yeah. Whereas mm-hmm. we used to have some cultural boundaries mm-hmm. up here and taboos, and so we would, you know, you would just avoid
wouldn't even it. Be an option.
Yeah, now it's mm-hmm.
And it's sold to the youngest
something
kids.
That's uh-huh. in fact mm-hmm. it's popular, mm-hmm. it's vogue to be open to that kind of you know, dysphoria or confusion. You know, so this what I've described here is the way the brain works. This is the progressive track of all addictions. They all have this mental or this brain aspect where the brain becomes, the brain finds this optimal neurological state, and the mind provides a narrative for it so that it begins to repeat and repeat. And not only OCD, but I've talked to people who have hallucinations. Now, their hallucinations aren't wanted, and they can be voices. Or some have even been visual hallucinations. Well, obviously, they're coming to me because they're hallucinations. So they recognize that they're not really out there. They're in here. They're in their head. Well, where in their head is this stuff? Well, it's just simply the neurology. What's going on is that the brain has found an optimal neurological state or some sort of an adrenaline spike or something like that. And it's a pleasant feeling, very much like I was saying, you know, the attraction to the gruesome or people that going to see a horror movie mm-hmm. or something like that. They're getting a neurological benefit out of it, and so they begin to repeat it. Hallucinations can be that way. People can actually look for the hallucination. Oh my gosh, am I going to have a hallucination? Oh no, here it comes! Yikes! And so they get the spike, and guess what? It's going to repeat and repeat. Well, these unwanted threatening thoughts and behaviors can eventually be sought out, even anticipated, and even accommodated. Other examples, so we talked about horror movies, you know, people going to horror movies. Also, nervous tics of all kinds. You know, so what is a nervous tic? Could be like facial grimacing, clearing the throat. My daughter had one of those.
Right.
It became a habit because there was something about anxiety, and in her by clearing her throat, it kind of triggered the brain to some sort of a distraction from the anxiety. So that clearing of her throat became the medication or the answer for low-level anxiety, and it became a habit. So she had to break that kind of a tick. Others, some people pull their hair, some people pick at their skin, some people talk to themselves. There's all kinds of little habits that we pick up. And homosexual thinking, homosexual thoughts, those can become habits the same way a tick or an obsessive compulsive can become a habit, precisely because it's an unwanted thought and it spikes something in the brain. And so
it's no different than any other addictive thought.
No, in that regard, it is not. How does this happen? So at a vulnerable time, let's say, what would that be? A time of guilt or shame in a person's life. Say the mind can overreact to that, and so it's reaching out for, as we've talked in many shows before, value, control, and power. And so satiating that need for value, control, and power can come in a negative, form, self-affliction, punishing oneself. And so sometimes the perhaps that might explain the brain, the mind's narrative having to do with the homosexual thought. I can imagine a person feeling guilty and ashamed of something and wanting a distraction from that, or feeling some kind of stress or depression and wanting a distraction from that. And
wanting a relief, medicine.
And so the brain wants to distract me from that. And what's something that would really distract me from that? The uncharacteristic thought. You know, it's very it's almost
the rejection of your own sexuality. I mean, yeah, it's like the baseline of where can we go to really be different? Well, I'm going to just reject my own sexuality.
Like that, without putting that much thought into it.
Right.
But intuitively or instinctively going that way, the mind could grab at a narrative. And that narrative immediately stimulates the brain, although I don't want it, that narrative, but it did the trick. It stimulated the brain.
Well, I've often thought homosexuality or sexual addiction, but just addiction in general, it is a response to hurt, pain, early pain, rejection, feeling rejection. So you go all the way and reject, reject your own sexual, I'm a boy, I don't want to have relationships with women. So it's at a young age, it kind of it's kind of like a religion. But you're saying it's an addiction.
There's that aspect and specifically too, the passing thought, the fleeting thought that it's such a normal thing, and yet people are beginning to treat it as though it has some dark significance, when in fact, the more you think about it, the more it will bother you, precisely because it's the unwanted thought that is going to spike that neurology in your brain. And then once that desired situation or stimulation is precedent, then the mind will continue to repeat that narrative in order to facilitate that that brain activity.
So interesting hypothesis here. Homosexuality as a form of addiction, a form of OCD. And so then is it treated the same way as addictions and OCD?
Well, again, we're talking about homosexual thoughts, thinking that way. And so it is treated very much. I would treat it very much like I would treat OCD or talking to a person about eliminating hallucinations. You know, I'm having that hallucination again. Well, then in some way you want the hallucination. Why would I want it? Well, simply because it spikes it does something in the brain. It rewards the brain in some way, again, like a horror movie that, you know, something scary. So some final thoughts here. Because I have, I do find myself talking to people who have these fleeting thoughts, just like, we have other fleeting thoughts and we get rid of them pretty quickly. For some reason, this particular thing bothers people. If Billy Graham steps on the elevator and, there's a gal there in a short dress, it doesn't ruin his day, and so we have these, any person has fleeting, can be I'm upset at someone with at the four-way stop or something, but I don't then consider myself, maybe I am a murderer. But somehow with this...
well, it's because it's an identity. It's an alternative lifestyle that we we despise, don't like, don't want, and yet here we're thinking about it.
Yeah, and the media is saying, whether you like it or not, you know, the reality is... And so for the vast majority of men and women today who find themselves caught up in this kind of, you know, we were talking about the postmodernistic moral free fall, and to find themselves with this kind of morbid attraction to unwanted homosexual thoughts, need to realize how that this mental process, how this mental process works, and that the thoughts themselves are simply a form of addiction, just like OCD or a hallucination. And again, that these particular thoughts, precisely because they're deplorable, they stimulate the brain, but not in a constructive way, not in the way that we want them to. And so what we need to know is that these thoughts can form addictions, and that's why they keep coming back. It's not because I'm actually homosexual, and there, so these thoughts come back. Because they're unwanted, and because they're unwanted, they stimulate the brain in a certain way. It's just like the person who's hallucinating doesn't want the hallucination to return, and precisely because of that, they almost anticipate the hallucination, and so it does return. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. So we deal with these thoughts just the way you would deal with any other addictive thought. This is not something inside of you, your true nature, trying to come out. It's just that, you know, you've created a habit here where that particular thought is stimulating your brain. It could have been anything.
Well, the Bible says it plainly, the flesh desires what is contrary to the spirit. In other words, sin.
Maybe an answer for why these particular thoughts spike the brain the way they do.
So don't freak out. This is what's common, you know, but you don't have to give in to this.
Yeah.
And there is a way out. And despite what our culture says, this is not you trying to find some new identity and that you're really, really, really should be gay or whatever. It's not.
It can be just as simple as an addictive thought pattern.
Okay, well, if people are struggling with this, maybe they're young people are. You work with young people as well. If you need some help, how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. This show is going to be on the podcast at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And also, people can email me through that website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Okay. Another great broadcast, Sound Mind, with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.